What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Bridging to Geekdoms. I am your host, Robert Slavinsky, and on this episode, this episode is pretty cool. I've had some really cool episodes coming out lately. This one, I was really looking forward to, and I'm so happy I'm finally getting it out. I sat down and I talked with Matthew from Lightcast Podcast. Lightcast Podcast is an amazing show. Matthew does great work over there talking to insiders, talking to people within the industry. But today, I have him on because I wanted to talk Zack Snyder's Justice League. The Release the Snyder Cut movement is huge right now, and that is what I wanted to talk to him about. He's done extensive research. He's had guests on his show who have talked at nauseam about it, but that's okay because it's an exciting time. If you're somebody who is excited about what Zack Snyder was creating or seeing Zack Snyder's Justice League, this is a podcast for you. You can sit here, listen to it, and you'll know some details that you may not have known before. This movie is coming. With all the news and rumors that have been swirling around this week, we know that that movie is coming. It's just a matter of when and how we're going to get it. So at this point, I want you all to listen to this podcast. Check it out. Listen to Matthew and I talk about what Zack Snyder was creating with his Justice League movie, as well as what he did with Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and what could have been moving forward. So sit back, enjoy the show, and I'll see you all on the other side. What's going on, everyone? I am back again with another guest here. I am with Matthew from Lightcast. It is a pretty awesome podcast that I started listening to only a couple weeks ago, but it's because of the Snyder Cut that I was actually, the Snyder Cut movement that I was actually put onto the show. So how's it going, Matthew? How are you doing today?
Good, man. Thank you for bringing me on.
Not a problem. I do want to say that I really have enjoyed your podcast over the last few weeks, ever since I started listening to it. And it sounds weird that, you know, I have you on the show after a few weeks of hearing it, but you have a lot of cool guests that I've seen on the show. You talk about pretty much the same kind of topics that I do and my co-host Colton does on this show, but you're so well-spoken. I really love the way that you put on your interviews. You're very knowledgeable. And that's really what keeps drawing me back to your show. How did you get into podcasting? How did you get to being where you were at now, even?
Well, thank you. I never assumed that I was soft-spoken, but a lot of people do tell me that. I think we started this podcast, and I say we because it was me and a couple other friends started this podcast back in, I think it was like 2012, 2013, and I think we were drinking at the time, and that's where all great conversations start.
Yeah.
And we started doing it then, and then as we kind of grew into this podcast, I really wanted to like get it going into a way that as I was finishing my degrees and I was, you know, I went to film school and things like that. I studied film and I was working with a very good video effects artist, Ben Sager, over at Optic Pictures. And he did we had a really good connection, a good bond. And we just kind of jumped on one day when we were drinking at my apartment. And my good friend jumped on as well. And then we started a podcast. And as we kind of molded through the years, we kind of stopped recording, I think, in 2013, the same year. We went for a good solid year, and then we stopped for about 6 years. And then we wanted to come back, and I came back. And they went on. They started another podcast, and he kind of wanted to go into gaming and kind of focus on Twitch and do gaming over there. And we kind of were trying to get this podcast going again, and we didn't really have a direction, and I just kind of like steamrolled it forward with the idea that I've always wanted to talk to people about their overall like motivation and their experiences working on YouTube channels and the things they do and get a sense of, you know, what it is that drives them to do what they do. 'Cause I'm very interested in how other people kind of approach things. And I love other people's opinions and dialogue because, I mean, without it, we wouldn't even have a conversation. So I kind of like the difference of opinions.
I'm with you on that 100%. And that's kind of what we've been doing with Bridging the Geekdom. It's kind of interesting how, in a sense, we kind of do the same thing in a way when it comes to podcasting. You know, we've started branching out, talking to a lot of different people. Lately, we've been reaching out to a lot of cosplayers only because they're really, really interesting. I don't know how many cosplayers you know or have talked to, but they are really, really interesting to talk to and seeing how they've gotten into their love of that, as well as kind of combining it with the pulp culture side of things. They're, you know, Star Wars or comic book or, you know, Doctor Who or whatever it is. And it's really neat to talk to people. And I'm the same way. I love starting a conversation and getting to know what people are doing and why they're doing it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. It's great that you bring that up. I do know a lot of cosplayers. It's quite funny. I don't put them on the show as much, but I do know a lot of cosplayers, and they're very interesting people. There's a lot of dedication that goes into cosplay, for sure. They go out of their way just to make probably 90 to 80% of the outfits that they're putting on or they're using from other designs from other artists, and they put a lot of work into it. So. Yeah.
It's crazy, and the amount of time and money it takes. We just talked to one a few weeks ago, who she doesn't have a job, and she's doing this, going to just different places like thrift stores and Goodwill and stuff like that, and that's where she's getting all of her stuff. It's really interesting. It's really cool, and she is an amazing cosplayer. It's incredible what she's able to do with just doing that. Now, we're going to kind of, jump over here with you. I mean, your show, it's been on for a while. How did you, and I know you said that you went to film school and everything like that, but I see you have some pretty decent connections on your show. How did that all fall into place where you've actually had some really interesting guests on there?
Kind of how that kind of worked is, I just kind of, well, that's a good question, actually. I'm trying to tiptoe around the answer, and I'm trying not to. But I kind of, in a way, you could say, put yourself out there or say the things. I know that I was on, it's kind of funny because I don't like to bring it up, but I think it's part of my life story. So I was on that Popcorn Planet with Andy Signor, I believe it was. And I just went on there to answer a question because he wanted to ask people questions about the Snyder Cut. And I've been following it for a long while. I don't put myself out there at that time to really know, what Zach knows. I never claimed to have known what Zach knows, but everything's pretty much in your face. You can connect the dots. It's pretty easy. And, it kind of started there. Not to say that he started it there, but that is when, he started asking questions like, who is this guy? Why do you think you know more than other people? And he went on and talk about himself, self-loathing and things like that, and boasting himself. And I just clearly stated that, Zack Snyder is a producer of Wonder Woman 84. I don't know how that's hard to not understand. And from there, I already had a somewhat of a connection with Taylor Murphy over at the Cultured Nerd. And then from there, my connection just kind of grew to just reaching out to people and asking certain questions. And when I have these conversations with people, before my show, I like to get to know who the people are. I have a small conversation with them. I give them a little background into myself, kind of the things I used to do and the things I did and where I'm at now. And I get to know a little bit about them. And I try to do that with every guest that I have. And I try to build a relationship with them. And, it's really about putting yourself out there and actually having the conversation instead of trying to incite an argument or try to push people away or push them from their initial thoughts to kind of put yourself, correct or put yourself right when, this isn't really the place for it. I mean, if we forget about the discourse and people and the discussions that we should have, then in the end, I mean, you're really only having a discussion with yourself.
I don't want to get into the Andy Signor stuff, but I would love to have a sit down with him myself. he's just such a negative person sometimes when it comes to things. It's just aggravating. But
I mean, I don't think, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I don't think Andy Signor is a bad person. I never claimed that he was a bad person. I never went out of my way to say you're a bad guy or anything like that. I never claimed him to be anything he wasn't. But you know, I do put out information that is easy to find in a way that, you know, the interpretation of that information is kind of however you wish to take it. But reality is, you know, it is out there. You can find it. But I don't paint the guy as a bad guy. I think he's a very, you know, he's an okay guy. I mean, I don't know him personally, but he has, you know, his own history and his own life story that he's trying to work around. And I just personally think, my own opinion is, I don't think he's going about it in the right way. I don't agree with a lot of things that he says or what he puts out there. But I don't think he's a bad guy.
Yeah. No, I completely get it. I'm not sitting there. I was more alluding to the Snyder Cut stuff. He's very negative when it comes to that. And it's just unfortunate because, and we'll get to this in a little bit, I just don't understand why people have to be so negative about it. What are they getting out of it? You know, but we'll get to that in a minute here. So really, I mean, Taylor Murphy, that's kind of what we're going to lead to a bit here. That was the interview I don't know if it was your first one or second one that you had with him, where you guys talked about the Snyder Cut. That's what really got pulled me into listening to Lightcast. And that kind of stemmed me going out, and I tried to reach out to Taylor Murphy myself, and I did. Yeah. I actually got a hold of him, and I started talking to him on Instagram a bit. He set me up with one of his editors, and I actually had him come on the show, and we discussed Marcus from The Culture Nerd. We sat down and we talked a lot about his article that he wrote a few weeks back, you know, about the Snyder Cut actually coming out. And it was really interesting. And I kind of want to thank you, because if it wasn't for your show, it kind of wouldn't have pointed me in that direction and getting to talk to Marcus. So thank you for that. Now, what is your background when it comes to Zack Snyder's vision of DC? What is it that you take a look at? And were you a big fan of Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman? Or are you kind of on the line of just like, I'd love to see what his vision was for Justice League, and it's kind of it's kind of ridiculous what Warner Brothers put him through. I mean, which side do you fall on there?
That's a good question. And it's interesting you bring that up. I'll jump back just a sec. I will go to your question. But you did bring up Taylor Murphy was the first episode. And actually, that's right. In season four, that's when the whole change happened with the show is – he was the first episode, and I did want to come out really hard because me and Taylor were having conversations back and forth on Instagram for a long time before that episode dropped. And eventually it just sparked in me that, you know, I asked him, hey, you want to do an episode about this article you wrote? And we'll go into some other stuff that I know and that you know. And he said, sure, let's do it. And then that's where the first episode for season four started. And then I went on and talked to Sean O'Connell, who is writing the book for the release of Snyder Cut. And very interesting man, very interesting guy. There was a lot of questions I wanted to ask him, but I didn't want to tip the toe because I know that he's still writing the book. Mm-hmm. And now I saw the tweet that he just finished his first draft, which is exciting. And now he's going to be working on an additional draft. That's just, you know, how the process goes. And it kind of sparked from there and got into the Jeff Johns and John Berg conversation, which kind of where everything was leading. But to answer your question about the Zack Snyder stuff, I was been a fan of film for, I can probably say, as many as every listener out there, anybody that listens right now, is probably when they were very young. I think the film that brought me in was... It would have had to been Wizard of Oz, or I know it's very strange, Wizard of Oz and Seven Samurai I watched when I was very young, and then kind of branched into RoboCop and things like that. And I was very interested in all those types of films. And that's which kind of led me to wanting to do film and kind of write and go into that area. And then as I saw Zack Snyder coming up, I remember watching the Michael Jordan little expose he did. And then I knew that I watched the commercial of Subaru, and I was just talking about this the other day. I was watching the Subaru commercial he did. I don't know if you remember it. It was like a, I think it was a WRX or I don't, not a WRX. It was a, like one of those hatchback ones. I forgot what it is, but Subaru. My friend actually drives that same exact car. And he did that commercial. And at the time, that was like early on Michael Bay status. Like, it's like when the car's coming around the corner. Mm-hmm. And just the way he shot it, to me, didn't feel like a commercial. It felt like I was watching like an action movie. It felt like I was in the car. I felt what he felt. You know, I was moving with the vehicle, and it showed, like, it made me want to buy a Subaru. And from there, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And then when I found out that he was directing Dawn of the Dead in 2004, and I remember watching it, it blew my mind. Like, that's when it all started for me, that I was like, oh, this is he's a very good director. And then 300 came, and then he did The Guardians, the children's book about the owls, The Guardians of the Ga'ul. And I was like, I read that children's book, and he made that book so much more better than actually reading it.
I never read it. You know, I've seen his movies. I've seen all of his movies, but I never read that book. So, you know, the movie didn't hit me as much as probably someone like you did, that movie specifically, but I enjoyed it for what it was, but it didn't hit me in a certain way because I never read the book. I honestly, when I first saw it, I didn't even know there was a book prior to that.
Yeah, very true. I actually read that. I used to be a kindergarten teacher. I used to work as a kindergarten teacher, and I used to read that book. And I remember I would play the movie afterwards. It was kind of like, you know, you read the story and then you play the movie afterwards. You kind of lead up to it and kind of explain. And the children's book is it's a scholastic book. And it was really, you know, interconnected into, you know, relationships and building bonds and, you know, kind of looking at everything. And for a young child, you know, you're putting in the eyes of an owl, which is very unique. And because as a child, you're very captivated to that. And so the movie was, for me, it was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, this is such a great representation of what's going on. And it focuses very heavily on, you know, the characters. And I just found it interesting that the way his style of directing. And when Man of Steel came out, I remember going to the theater, and I was expecting like a Christopher Reeve style. Like, oh, we're going to, because it's been so many years since Superman Returns that everybody's still tainted by that film. And
I don't know. I was a fan of it. I don't know. I'm not saying it was the best Superman, but I really enjoyed Superman Returns. I don't know why there's so much hate around it.
And no, you have a good point. A lot of people do like it. A lot of people do enjoy it. I have friends that still enjoy it. They still talk about it today. Brandon Routh did a good job as that version of Superman for that story. For me, it was more of the production end that kind of drove me away from the story, just because of kind of how, you know, the film was kind of put together and kind of, you know, the direction that it was going. It just didn't sit well with me. I was like, you're trying too hard to be Christopher Reeve, when it kind of should have gave Brandon Routh a perfect opportunity to stand on his own, but he never did.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that he came back in the, I think it was the TV series. He did the Alex Ross.
Yeah, he was the Kingdom Come version, which turned out to be the Christopher Reeve version as well, which I thought was really interesting how they kind of connected the two together. If you didn't watch it, he did an amazing job in that. And there was a lot of talk after that, like, hey, they need to cast him as Superman in a TV show or something like that down the line. And now that he's leaving Legends of Tomorrow, everybody's like, yeah, that's what he's going to go and do. And I don't think that's the case, but he did do an amazing job with it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm interested in watching it. Maybe when I get time, I'll probably sit down and actually take a look at it. Mm-hmm. But it was, for me, walking into Man of Steel, it was very interesting in how the opening scene was so reminiscent to kind of, in a sense, Christopher Nolan, because kind of Christopher Nolan set that bar, but it wasn't Christopher Nolan set the bar for comic book films. And I think for a lot of people, they think that's kind of what it is. And for me, it wasn't that he set the bar for comic book films. I think he set the bar for storytelling. Because if you replace Batman with any other character or detective, just put a detective in his place, it would still be a very, very interesting movie just to watch from beginning to end. And for just kind of Man of Steel in its sense, it had that same escape. But when you watch the film, it's almost as if he's telling the story the way that the writers of Smallville were telling the story, which was, you know, Superman is born, he starts here, and then he grows up, and now he's Superman. The three arcs of Superman. And I think when it came to Man of Steel, Zack Snyder wanted to focus on the area that not many people focused on. He wanted to take the elements of what happened in Smallville show. He wanted to take the elements of the comic and to the source material. And then he wanted to tell the story from Clark's perspective. And I've never seen a Clark film before. I've never saw Clark on screen, because that's not Superman. I mean, I go back and I still have conversations with people that Superman is not in Man of Steel. Like, we never see him. We see Clark trying to be, you know, Superman, and he's attempting to be Superman, but we never see Superman. And I thought that was a great interpretation of how to introduce a character like that. And I think from that moment, I wanted to know more of what he's bringing to the story, because that got a lot of people to go into the comic books again and look at the story, go back to their local comic book stores and pick up more Superman comics. I have a good friend that runs a comic book store here locally. And when that movie came out, he was so impressed by the people showing up at his store, picking up comic books and graphic novels. And it sparked that conversation again. Is Superman relevant?
I can't agree more. I can't. There's no way. To me, Man of Steel is the best superhero movie, in my opinion. You know, and you said it best. It's not even a superhero movie. It's a movie about Clark. But just the way that it builds the character was better than any origin that I've seen when it comes to superhero movies that have released even to this point. I'm not going to rag on Marvel at all, but they're very cookie cutter. You know, the first Iron Man was excellent. It was a lot of fun. But after that, every single one just seemed to be the same thing over and over again. And Man of Steel kind of flipped it around a little bit. And I think Snyder, in my opinion, I think Snyder had to do that because they've never been able to humanize Clark and Superman, ever. Just in any medium. You've never seen it in comics and in animation or even the old Christopher Reeve films. He was never humanized. He was always larger than life. He was always viewed as a god. And taking it from Clark's perspective, that humanizes him, because we're now seeing what it's like to be Clark Kent, and we're not seeing this godlike figure. That is what I love about that movie so much. And I have some debates from time to time with one of my other buddies in our network. We sit there and we debate it all the time, because he doesn't hate Man of Steel. He just, he hates how he says they don't understand Superman. And I'm like, no, you don't understand the movie. It's not about understanding Superman. And you know, we get in debates all the time, and it's unfortunate. It really is, because it is a fantastic film. And it was the first movie that wasn't animation, Lion King, in my sense here, where I cried. There was a moment where I cried in the theater watching Man of Steel, and it was just one of those moments. Or that film was just so absolutely amazing, in my opinion. And I love talking to somebody like yourself right now who understands it. Finally, it's so hard to find people who truly understand what that movie is about, and it did. It drew me more to Superman. I'm not going to sit here and say I was a huge Superman fan prior to this movie. I was a bigger Batman fan. The first movie I ever saw in theaters was 1989 Batman. I was 4 years old in my mom's lap and I fell asleep. But, you know, I turned into being a huge Batman fan. So Man of Steel coming out and it just blowing me away, that kind of cemented it for me when it came to what I wanted to see from Snyder moving forward. And I remember walking out of theater like, I hope there's another one. I hope there's another one. Because there still was no announcement at that point when I saw it, you know. But yeah, I mean, from that, I mean, how did you get to Batman vs. Superman yourself? Like, were you interested in seeing what came next? Or were you kind of like, well, let's see what somebody else can do?
Well, I mean, the number one thing that, you know, for any franchise when they start is it's always the testing ground. I mean, X-Men was the testing ground for the franchise of the X-Men, or like even with Batman Begins with Christopher Nolan, there was never a conversation to We're going to do the next one, Dark Knight. That's why Dark Knight took so long to come out after Batman Begins, is because Warner Brothers didn't know if their franchise would continue. And the way Batman Begins ends is it ends with this idea that he's being Batman. Like he's invited into this world, and now he is part of it at the very end of the movie, and the light shines, and he's working on a new case that he's going to look into, which is the Joker case, but you never see him actually look into it. He's working on other things. And so that's a nice tip off. And I think Man of Steel does that at the end, is that it poses the question. I think you brought up a point that, you know, we don't see a lot of heart of Clark in the Superman story in the comics. Well, I always refer to a certain issue. It's Superman Unchained by Scott Snyder and Jim Lee. And if anybody ever gets the opportunity to go read it, because there's a scene in the book. It's probably midway through, and it shows Clark kind of questioning himself, because if he were to punch a man in the story, he would have killed him as a child. And it shows him have that moral choice. I can end this right now, and I can kill this man, or I can choose not to and save his life. And that moral question is kind of tested in Man of Steel, where Superman ultimately kills Zod because there's no other option. You know, you've come in clash with two gods in a world that is godless at that time, and now is questioning its own morality and its own faith into what's right and what's wrong. And I thought that the way Zach did it was he humanized the world in a way that now it's real. Like, this world accepts what's happening, and then it ends with him still being Superman. Because the way Man of Steel ends is he's just, you know, he's doing his thing, he's doing Superman, he's asking the government to know, just ask him, talk to him. And, you know, it kind of ends with that open-ended window, but at the same time it's a nice little bookend if it were just a standalone. But when we got Batman Superman, I think that's where it changed. I think that is where the movie came out too soon. I think the movie came out in a time when Marvel was shooting out these what comic book movies should be. And they're good movies. They're entertaining. I don't bash on all of them. There's some of them I don't agree with, like Iron Man 3. I just thought that was a waste of film space.
Thank you.
On any any catalog. But just because the movie just doesn't make sense. Because
yeah.
When you build that cinematic world, you have to understand that when you're doing that, there's going to be plot holes, and you got to do your best to cover them. But when you start to, and it's an actual method, it's a used method. It's a Grecian method, which is called the Procrustean method, where you take an idea or you take something, you try to stretch it out to make it fit a certain area. And when you start to stretch it, it starts to retract, it starts to pull back. And then you start to see the inner linings of what's happening underneath, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to make it fit when in fact it doesn't fit. So I think when it comes to Batman Superman, it was a perfect follow-up, but it was way too soon. I thought that film coming out was going to make people in the theater I remember sitting there watching it with my friend, and he looked at me and I looked at him, and I just went, I gotta fucking watch this movie again. I left, I went back in, I watched it again, and I came out with another impression. And then I went to my fiance, or she was my girlfriend at the time. We went back in, and then she came in with me, and I told her, you have to watch this movie. I need your advice, because I have a couple questions, but I want you to do it so I get a difference of opinion. And she sat there with a notebook and she watched the whole movie. And then it came out, I watched the Ultimate Edition, and then all my notes went out the window. And then when I watched the Ultimate Edition, I was like, oh, fucking, you know what? All the questions I had were answered. And now I have new questions.
Yeah.
And because this is where my focus is going, especially in my academia, is I have an English background in creative writing and also in English education, with a master's in the same field, working on possibly getting a PhD in that Vibram, where I want to be able to, because comic books are so relative to how we view these characters. We view some of them as gods. And when people argue and say, no, that's, we don't do that, you got to understand that We do in a sense, because we put them in frames, we put them on pedestals, we make statues of them, we put them in our homes, we wear their shirts, we wear their icons, we're constantly telling stories of them. And they're a modern day American, you know, gods in a way. And I love the way that Neil Gaiman kind of attacks those types of questions in his books. Mm-hmm. And I always recommend Neil Gaiman for anybody that wants to get into comic books, because he's such a great writer. And the same with Alan Moore. And he really dives deep into the mythos of these characters and where they're derived from and why they're so important and relevant to today's society, and especially the moral questions that they ask. I mean, Watchmen is one of the best comic books to ever sit on the shelf in the top. I think it's still the top New York Times best sellers, and you know, it's the top one of a kind. So I mean, in that sense, that novel should not be a movie, but Zach of course made it a movie. But when we go and we talk about Batman Superman, we have to look at it through a different lens, a different medium. It's not a comic book, and it doesn't play like a comic book. It plays like a moral a moral obligation as a human to ask those questions. If somebody like him came, how would we respond? And we got an answer. Batman responded as a human, but dressed as a hero in that sense, that it was really about Bruce and his struggle to understanding a world that he doesn't understand. And by the end of it, he understands that it's not about, you know, who you are as a person, rather be alien or any type of race or ethnicity. It's about who you are as a human. Mm-hmm. And he's humanized by the end of that movie. And you see it in the scene with him and Diana at the graveyard, is that he says it, men are still good. And he sees that Clark is no longer an alien, because in the beginning he was an alien. And, you know, we have to take that 1% chance, even though it's an absolute certainty. At the end of the movie, he's calling him a man, and men are still good. And there's this impression and this monument, you know, we build these monuments. And if you look at the design of Clark or Superman in the movie in Metropolis, that design is relevantly close to Alexander the Great in the way it's his construction, the way that we never really see the model of the face and how it's kind of bridged away, and how he's holding the world on his axis and he's bridging up. And that's almost in a way a Grecian style-esque artistic design, because, you know, Alexander the Great was to some and many other people a god in a way, and their savior and their hero. And that's kind of the way Zach in a sense envisions these characters in that world. Is because it would actually happen if, I mean, to be honest, let's ask her a question. If somebody came down to this planet, I mean, would you freak out? Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you telling me that fucking guy can fly right now and he's shooting laser beams out of his eyes? Nah, that's not Superman. Mm. Superman does it. We don't know what Superman would do. We know that the stories tell us different things, because every story has its own unique architectural design with its narrative. But in the overall sense of the story, it's best to always open up that avenue. And it's quite interesting. And that's really where it took off for me, that I was like, fuck. I got to see how this ends. I want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
Because he dies is not an ending.
No.
He dies is like it's a call for action.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of in the same boat as you when I first saw Batman vs. Superman. I actually despised it. I was so upset when I left that theater. And I was so upset with it that I went home, and I like to do fan fiction from time to time. Yeah. And I kind of sat down. I was like, you know what? This would have been a better version. I sat down and started typing up a version that I thought would have been better. And, you know, my buddy who I went with fell asleep during the movie. You know, my other friend was all mad because people kept cheering when Wonder Woman came on screen. So it was just a mess. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the Ultimate Edition came out, because if I'm not mistaken, I think I remember that was actually announced prior to the movie or right after the movie came out that we were going to get that Ultimate Edition. So I kind of kept that hope alive. Like, okay, I know Zack Snyder. You know, Zack Snyder's kind of the person who, if his whole vision can be seen, it's going to be a good one. I think that happened with Sucker Punch and Watchmen, I think. Wasn't there an extended edition of Watchmen?
There is. It's the Doomsday. And that's the thing with Zack Snyder. There's a Doomsday edition. It's I think it's called the Doomsday edition of Watchmen. And it's like close to 4 hours long because he takes the Black Freighter, the animated movie with Jared Butler, and he puts it into the movie. And it plays simultaneously just like the comic book. I think I had this conversation with someone. If you watch Zack Snyder's version, the ultimate cut, the Doomsday edition, and sit there and watch it with the comic book in hand, it's almost in a way a great medium to look at the comic, see the shots that are happening in between the panels of the art, because that's how Zack kind of shot that film. He shot it with what's happening from this panel to this panel, and he focuses on that idea. He shows you the panel, but then he shows you what happens in between those two panels.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the, of course, moving picture. So it's quite interesting to watch it with the book. But every Zack Snyder film, there's always an extended cut. There's always some extension of his film because he always wants to get the director's cut out there. And it was very strange when we go back and we don't see a director's cut of Justice League.
Correct. Yeah, but I mean, real quick, I'm going to jump back here. It was the extended cut that I would then watch, the Ultimate Edition, I watched, and just like you, because I had so many questions after I saw the theatrical version, and just, I was so upset, and I even watched people's YouTube videos trying to explain it, but it wasn't hitting me. I'm like, well, where's that at in a movie? I don't understand. Like, what are you talking about? It was then, when I saw the Ultimate Edition, where it just blew me away, and I was like, I get it. And I understand what's going on. Yeah, I have some more questions, but I have a feeling that it's all going to be answered in the upcoming films. So that's kind of where it went for me when it came to Batman for Superman. And I love how you are picking it apart in a sense and saying, like, look, you know, Snyder added this kind of element to it or did this to it, because that's a lot of what I think people just miss. I think they were so used to the idea of these cookie cutter superhero films. And I'm not going to sit here and say that the Dark Knight trilogy was cookie cutter, because it wasn't. It was a really good trilogy. But even that had a lot more simplicity to it than what Snyder was building with his universe here. And to me, I think with Marvel already, what was it? I think it was about 10 films in by this time, by the time Batman vs. Superman came out, people were just so used to those really simplistic, comedic, you know, and colorful superhero movies, that Batman vs. Superman was kind of that movie that people were like, oh man, that's dark, that's brooding, that's, I don't know, where's that Marvel stuff? I like that Marvel stuff better. Didn't help also that prior to it coming out, there was already, you know, talk about the turmoil going on with WB and saying that it's too dark. They have to cut it, you know, it's 4 hours. You got to cut it down to 2.5 or 3 hours, whatever it was, you know. There was so much of that going on in the background as well, and it was getting out. I think it was almost doomed from before it even had a chance. And it's unfortunate because Snyder's vision and the way that he directs, he is one of the most visually stunning directors that is out there. And it's just so unfortunate that, I'm not saying that it was a failure, because it wasn't, it didn't fail. It made a crap ton of money, but it also didn't make a billion like I think everybody thought it was going to as well.
I think that's the trademark for comic book films now, is if you don't hit the billion mark, it's a failure. But you know, if you look at a lot of films where they say like, oh, this movie's gonna make $1 billion and it doesn't, then it says, well, it's still a success. But when there's just this negative stigma on DC films that they feel like, a lot of people feel like they had their time to shine. Now it's time for other comic books to come out, other comic book films to come out. But it's like, it's not about that for me. It's, I'll watch anything. Like, I'll watch any comic book movie that comes out because it's a new story. I want to see another story played on screen. And I'm excited for the Marvel film coming out, the Seven Rings, the Shang-Chi film.
Yeah.
The Seven Rings. I want to see that. I think it's going to be very interesting. I'm excited to see that, especially because the actor in the movie that's playing him, I think it's Simi Liu from I forgot what that show is on Netflix. Kim's Convenience. If you guys get a chance, go watch Kim's Convenience. He's amazing in that. And it's so interesting because these comic book films have now started a culture of their own, and people are picking sides. And I'm over here like, I mean, you could pick sides, like that's cool, but I still want my movies. Like, I still want to see them. They're still a cash grab. People are still going to go watch them. And it's funny that you bring up the numbers, because I think when Batman Superman the Ultimate Edition came out, I mean, prices and budget, or not budget, the performance of that skyrocketed. People were going out and picking it up, and there's still people out there that doesn't even know that there's a totally different movie to Batman Superman in the Ultimate Edition. I mean, it's a completely different movie. Mm-hmm. It's not the same style. It's a completely reinvigorated narrative that pretty much connects why Lex Luthor is trying to manipulate Superman, and he's using Batman to do it. I mean, that whole narrative is in there.
Yeah.
And it shows you how clever Lex Luthor really is, because that's ultimately how it goes out in the real world too. I mean, people get manipulated every day. You get manipulated reading your local news or your local blog every day.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong. And I'm going to kind of jump on this whole Lex Luthor thing you're saying here. People were just turned off by Jesse Eisenberg's version immediately with that anyways. And I mean, there is a cult following, in a sense, when it comes to Batman vs. Superman, and really what Zack Snyder was building. And it's mm-hmm. hard. Those people that are out there that don't know about this other version, it's hard to pull them back in who have seen that theatrical cut, because, one, they have this opinion on the actors. You know, some people don't like Jesse Eisenberg. Some people don't like Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, which I don't know how you cannot, but there are people. I've talked to people that are like that, and it's hard to pull them in to say, look, I understand that movie wasn't what you thought it was going to be, but check this version out and then tell me you're not excited for what the next film was or supposed to mm-hmm. be. I've had that conversation so many times with people, and it's difficult. It really is, because they don't want to. I don't know if it's that they don't want to sit for 3 hours and watch a movie, but I think it's just this mentality out there that surrounds this film, Batman vs. Superman, that's out mm-hmm. there. It just seems like there's just so much hate for it. And it just doesn't make sense. You know, even when the theatrical cut, even when it came out, I didn't like it, but I wasn't bashing on it. You know, I wanted to understand it. I was like, help me. What did I miss? You know, you people who really like it, what did I miss? There just aren't people like that out there. It's annoying, and it's in some sense.
Yeah, I could see that. And my only, you know, thought to that is, I mean, if you don't like it, that's fine. Don't like the film. I mean, I'm not here to persuade you to like it, but I am here to, like, and this is kind of where the podcast goes into play, is that I want to shine a light on the area that a lot of people don't see, or they try to ignore. And I try to talk about very objective facts. And there's times where I'll go into speculation. I love Chris over at Ping Pong Flicks. He does the foil hat, and he puts on the foil hat when he speculates, because, you know, I just think it's funny. And I find it very interesting that there's this area where people just disagree with a lot of things that people say, but they're very naive, and sometimes at a point hesitant to even look at the information themselves, because they don't want to be proven wrong. And the internet is the perfect place to not prove people, to prove other people wrong, but not to prove yourself right, and to show why, and to have that discussion. It's almost like a give and take, or it's a parasocial relationship where I'm just basically going to take from you, and I'm not going to give you something back. And it's a one-sided relationship. You're wrong, and that's all I need to say. Shut your mouth. Don't talk anymore. And that's kind of where the podcast, in a way, I want to have that discussion. I want to have that discussion with people that are talking about these things and understand why they think that way. And at the same time, look at it from their perspective, because everybody has their own internal relationship with these characters. I mean, the people that are hating on Batman, Superman, I want to know why. I mean, I think one of the biggest arguments that came out of that film was, wasn't it Batman killing? I think was one of the biggest ones. That's where
yeah.
it started.
Yeah.
And I find that to be the funniest. I find it to be so funny, because Batman does kill. he has done in the past. He's done it on countless occasions. He's done it in a variety of comics. I mean, I can turn around and, you know, I'm in my office right now, but I can turn around and just grab, you know, like 5-6 graphic novels where he kills, and, you know, go pull over the drawer of Batman comics, a plethora that I have, and just pull them out and show you. He's done it, but does he do it at face value? No. I mean, but does he do it in Batman Superman? Yeah, there's going to be casualties that get in the way. I mean, it happens, but, you know, and that's the ultimate question to Superman. You know, he shouldn't. He's trying to be a better version, and Batman's looking up to that. And it's even explored in the comics. It's explored in, you know, in certain films. I think in, Christopher Nolan kind of set that bar, you know, we don't kill, but even in Christopher Nolan's film, there was a couple times he killed a couple people. And, you know, I think in Dark Knight Rises, he shot through the end sequence, where Talal al Ghul's in the truck and he shot the bat. He was using the bat ship or whatever, and he shot through the truck and killed.
Yeah.
And he basically just, you know, murked them in there regardless. I mean, that guy's dead. You can't say he's not. But but Christopher Nolan, for Christopher Nolan, it's more about the narrative and trying to derive that you know, meticulous emotional response from the audience to see what's actually going on. That's why he uses a lot of close-up shots, and he uses a lot of like 50 mil shots and keeps it very tight because he's focused on the character.
Yes.
When we start opening up and we start looking at the wider shots and we start seeing a wider view, that's more for like sellmanship. I want to sell you the costume. I want you to see it. I want you to see how cool this is. And these are more for action shots, more personal shots, and more narrative driven stories. The camera's up close. It's in that 35 to 50 mil range, or even closer, depending on the, you know, the DP who's working. And I think with Zach, he does a very great job visually to balance that idea that when I need to get in tight, I'm going to get in tight and have these tight, close, emotional shots, especially with Batman and Batman Superman when he talks to Alfred. But when he does these action shots, if you pay close attention, he goes from a very wide shot with so much going on in that image that sometimes you want to pause it and look around to straight into it. And he does it so well that visual encompassing of the character is being told through the camera. It's not being told through the narrative, or it's not being told through the dialogue. It's being told through the camera. And it's quite interesting, especially for a visual director like him.
I agree completely when it comes to the way he shoots and visually, like I said earlier, his visuals on screen are just absolutely amazing and fantastic. One of my favorite scenes is one of those scenes that you're kind of talking about, with where you have the wide shot and then he gets in close with the emotion. And that's the death of Superman scene in Batman vs. Superman. You know, there's moments there where he's close up and intimate with like Batman and with Lois. But then you have the wide shot where, believe it or not, there's so much going on. Even though they're just all kind of standing there, there's so much behind, you know, that you could pick out. And, you know, whether it's the symbolism, the religious symbolism with the crosses in the background, or the birds flying overhead, there's so much that you can find with Zack Snyder, because he's not just, he's always building the story in almost every frame. Everything he's doing, there's something constantly going on. And that's what I love about what he does. Now, I kind of want to move on to Justice League here. You know, Batman vs. Superman came out. We all, and I'm not, we're not going to get into the intricacies. I've talked, I actually had Will Rollins on a couple weeks ago. We talked all about the intricacies.
Guy.
Yeah, he is. He's really cool. I talked to Marcus from The Culture Nerd about it. So I kind of want to stay away from the intricacies of what happened to Justice League, but let's, and you had it a whole bunch on your show, you know, about it with Taylor Murphy. And I encourage everybody to jump over and listen to that episode. It is a fantastic episode. You learn so much about what happened there. But what was it for you that you, what was the moment that you noticed, hey, something is wrong here, I don't think we're going to get the movie that we're supposed to get? Or did that not happen until you saw the movie?
No, that's a great question, actually. I remember watching the movie, and I was standing in line at a theater that my friend worked at, and he usually lets me in, but I don't like to really take advantage of people or like use people to get things or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm very, you know, a little back by that. I like to just kind of, I'll wait like everybody else or whatever. I mean, I might know the guy that runs the front gate or whatever, the manager of the theater, but I'll wait in line like everybody else. And I waited in line for, I think me and my friend waited there for like 3 hours to go see this film. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I was sitting there the whole time chilling. I mean, I had a drink or two, you know, that's why you carry a thermos. I am human. but I'm sitting there and we're waiting for this film and I'm getting pumped up. I got my Green Lantern shirt on because I know Green Lantern was in the film. You know, I am not that naive. And my buddy's got his whole Justice League shirt on and we're ready to watch this film. We go in, we watch it. I come out and I'm appalled. I'm like, you opened up with that opening shot of Henry. I was done. I clocked out. I clocked out at that point. I was like, no, this can't be. This can't be. Yeah. I thought I was watching a trailer for like maybe like, you know, like for a foundation, you know, like some, you know, awards or not awards foundation, but like a charity foundation. And it wasn't. It was the movie. And I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
I always ask people, do you think that there was no need for that in there? Why do you think they put that in there? Like, even if they would have taken that out, it wouldn't change anything about the movie. Why was it even there? I just don't get it.
That's a question for Jeff Johns and, you know, Joss Whedon and all them. I mean, they can answer that hopefully someday, probably never. But for me, I came out of the theater and I remember probably about 2 weeks later, I was working on one of my thesis and I was sitting in there working on it. And I was talking to my professor at the time. She's very, very intelligent. She's very smart. She worked for SNL and like The View. And we were just having a conversation about African-American literature and how she was getting into this this idea of how, you know, they wrote Clotel, the president's daughter. If you guys never read it, it's very interesting. It's a story of Clotel, that Thomas Jefferson's daughter. And I was sitting there reading it, and then it just popped in my head. And I was like, fuck, I really hated Justice League. And I didn't want to hate it. Like, I'm trying to force myself to like it, and it keeps distracting me. And I walked out and I tweeted. It was my first tweet on my Twitter, and I posted this long, long rant. I don't think it was a rant. It was more of a, like a, I don't know how to say it, like a confession in a way. That when I did it, I don't have it in front of me, but it's on my Twitter, and I'll send it to you if you want it. And I went into this whole thing. And I wasn't expecting people to respond, and nobody responded because, you know, I don't really follow Twitter all that much. But that's when it started for me, because I started to just go home and research. And then, you know, I'm putting together a timeline and I'm looking at what happened. And I was like, this is one of the biggest scandals in, you know, film.
Yeah.
It's never been seen before. Like, this is, I can't believe people are not talking about this bigger. And I'm over here working on papers and researching, and I was writing a paper about Batman Superman for another course, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, no one is talking about this. This is one of the biggest scandals. It almost is, in a way, Warner Brothers, whoever was in charge at that time, and now we kind of have an idea where the timeline is that they stole art from the people. You stole creative decisions from the people. It wasn't that you made that decision. You made that decision without the input of your fans and the people that go to these movies and the ones that will actually decide if they accept this art or they deny it. And that is everybody's ultimate choice. And that's what art is. It's an acceptance of human connectivity to the piece that you're watching or you're viewing. And if you don't like it, like if you're in a museum, you walk on to the next piece. You don't sit there and post up signs and tweet like, this is one of the worst fucking shit I've ever seen. This is garbage. Or this movie's great. This movie's, you don't do that. You take it in for what it is and you move on. And the people accept it. And to me, I felt like I was robbed as an individual. And then I did research and I realized that Zack Snyder was treated unfairly. The history around his family and the events that unfolded there kind of got to me. It sparked me. And I was like, you know what? I can't sit back and think that this is okay. And so I started dropping little hints in some of my podcasts that, you know, I'll talk about it, like hashtag release Snyder Cut, or like I'll do little things. And then eventually I was like, in this new season, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go after it. I'm going to start talking about it. I'm going to start going after every little thing. I'm going to look at the timeline. I'm going to pull up old tweets. I'm going to pull up blogs that were even incorrect. And they never retracted those posts. They kept them up because it, you know, it drives clicks. And then it became a clickbait type discussion where anytime somebody posts, it's clickbait. And I'm not trying to post things on Instagram or Twitter or anything to drive clickbait. I'm trying to start a discussion. I want people to start talking about the reality of what happened, not the fact of what happened, the reality of it. And I think that we're so much speculation that we always forget that this film is more for Zach now than it is for the fans. And it's the fans want it. Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see the initial decisions and the creativity that he wanted to put in it. But it's ultimately Zach's cathartic expression to his audience and kind of how he feels emotionally about everything that's occurred. And we were robbed. We were robbed from that. And I didn't think that that was okay. And I want to see retribution in some fashion come to grips with everything that's been unfolded. And I think Warner Brothers knows that. I think they know that there was poor decisions. And we saw the income, or we saw the outcome of that. I mean, people were fired. People were demoted. I mean, somebody had to go and start their own production company because of it. People were put down. I mean, they're still doing changes right now to Warner Brothers, and it's great to see Ann Sornoff come in. It's great to see Walter Hamada take over. It's great to see other fresh voices coming to the mix to show, you know, that these films are much a part of art as they are just an action flick. And when I saw The Joker, that's when I was like, you know, things are changing. You know, things are really happening that can really make not just comic book films, but films in general, to show that these artists take time and devotion and hours of work and time away from their families. And they put so much into these films. And in one of the recent articles I read, Josh Trank was talking about his Fantastic Four film and how the producers just gutted him on screen. I think he said it felt like he was being castrated. And I'm like, oh, you know, I can feel for that. Like, yeah. The empathy I have for that guy is so, like, it's so tarnishing to see someone like him who did Chronicles and then come out and have all these opportunities now. And he picked Fantastic Four. And then he gets butchered.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think I read that article myself the other day. It's real interesting what happened with Josh Trank. And, you know, and then how he himself, like, there was so much talk about, and he says he walked away from Star Wars. You know, there was so much talk that he was actually fired, but according to him, he's the one that walked away from it. I think that's the same article you were probably reading. Maybe not, I'm not sure.
The one from Polygon?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I read that one.
Yeah, but I am with you on the whole Snyder stuff here, because, I mean, for me, when I officially knew that there was something more going on, it was when they brought Danny Elfman on for the music. Only because I saw articles or posts or something from Junkie XL where he was talking and discussing about how he was almost completed with the score. And with how much work that he did up to that point, and with only about 6 weeks to go, it was kind of shocking to see that they were bringing in Danny Elfman. And that's when I kind of figured they're doing a tone shift, like a shift with the tone for the movie. And that's when all this stuff prior to that, you know, oh, this is Zack Snyder's movie. This is Zack Snyder's movie. I knew that that wasn't the case. I still went into the movie hopeful. I did. Mm-hmm. I actually came out of the theater. I have this thing where I get a little bit of a high when I go see a movie that I'm really excited about, and I'll make myself believe that I loved it. And that's just for some reason, that's how I am. So I came out of the theater, my co-host and I come out, we're excited. We're, yeah, this was awesome. We do a Facebook Live. Like, it was so great. Turn off the Facebook Live, go in and watch it again. And then I'm like, maybe not, maybe not so great. And that I took my kids a couple days later to go see it. That was when I was like, okay, this is not a good movie. And it's not a terrible film. And that's what I think some people don't understand is it's not that I'm sitting here saying I hate the film. It's that it's not what we wanted. It's not what we were expecting, because that film is actually pretty okay. Like it's, you know, it's a forgivable film. I'll say it's forgivable because I'm not putting the blame on Josh Whedon at all. You know, he was hired to do a job. And while I think he should have stood up and said, look, Zack Snyder was doing this, we should just do that. I'm not one of those people that's going to sit there and say, hey, you know, I blame Josh because of what happened. He did the best he could. He was instructed to do something, and he did the best that he could. It's forgivable on his part. Now, is it forgivable for what Jeff Johns did, what John Berg did, what, you know, Warner Brothers management did? No, not at all. I don't think any of that is forgivable at this point, you know, because they took advantage of Zack Snyder and what him and his family were going through. And it's despicable.
Well, there was an article that went out. I think I was bringing this up. I didn't post anything about it, but I think I might have said it in a podcast. That's what happens when you say something in a podcast. Sometimes you forget. I brought up this article. It was from, I believe it was by Mashable. I think it was in 2017. It was probably around July 2017. Zach stepped away, and they said he was let go in May to take personal leave. But the article kind of basically says that he was fired. I guess somebody that worked close, he tweeted on his Twitter that, you know, all this talk saying that, you know, he stepped away when in fact he was actually fired from the project. They fired Zach from the project. They, you know, basically that decision was made from DC execs. And that's kind of where it goes. I don't see the article gets floated around a lot. But the guy came out and basically tweeted it and said that, no, everything that's coming out that he stepped away for personal reasons was wrong. He was actually fired from it. And that was the article that I read. And I was like, fuck, man. like it just more and more lies on top of lies. And I'm the person that, like, if I don't know, I won't do my best to lie about it. And if I am wrong, I'll always go back and say, like, you know, I was wrong. This is the actual information. I got it wrong. You know, I had a wrong source, or I read it from a wrong website. When I say source, I usually do a lot of reading, and I dig really deep. I dig really, really deep. And I even go back years and years to where, and then I start to confirm some of these articles, and I start to, you know, reach out and ask questions and start to, you know, investigate in a way. And it's quite interesting when we actually look at this story and then we connect it to every other director in Hollywood that's been damaged. But back then they didn't have the internet, and now the internet's among us, and anything can be sent out in a tweet or in a message. And, you know, it's out there. It's out there in the ether, and anybody can get a hold of it, and it spreads like wildfire. And sometimes we try to collapse that. I think somebody was going around saying that, that they were trying to diminish Batman Superman before its release. And that kind of goes back to the podcast with Taylor Murphy. And I was trying to uncover why, like, that was happening. And he kind of pointed me in the right direction. And he didn't know too much about that, but he knew enough that when I confirmed with him, and it was like, yeah, that's pretty much, you know, what happens. That's where it goes. But it's very interesting when we talk about Justice League and we forget that when people tweet release the Snyder Cut, it's, I look at the tweet as release the creative freedom that Zach was trying to give everybody before he was silenced and before his vision was basically canned and shelved because it didn't fit a certain particular ideal that someone else had. And now we know that that ideal was completely wrong, and it was completely misconstrued. And what we got was a film that looked like, you know, Victor Frankenstein started to make a monster, and just, you know what, fuck it, I'll just leave it as it is. And it never grew to life. It pretty much ended a franchise, and they decided to start making movies in another direction. And I don't know, man, it sucks to really think about that, because the franchise that was building was already past $1 billion in its first two films. Like, that is a success. That's not a failure. Money doesn't lie. So
yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate how that all played out. And I do want to thank you for doing your research and everything like that, because a few months back on our website, I've kind of been the Snyder Cut guy on our network and website, and I've been pushing, I've been doing podcasts here and there and everything and talking about it, just trying to get stuff out there. And I wrote an article with a timeline of everything that I knew happened. You know, like, this is when this happened, this is when this happened, this is when this happened. And but it was, a lot of it was speculation on what was going on behind the scenes. And it was nice to see what you've done and what you've brought to podcasting and your show, as along with Taylor Murphy and his website and what they've brought, and really shedding light on truly what occurred. I know we don't know it all. I know there's still probably a good bit that's not being told yet, but it's nice to see that there's people out there, and it's finally picking up some steam, because you're not wrong. Like you said a little bit ago, people should have been talking about this in 2017. You know, this is something that should have been at the forefront of Entertainment Weekly and you know, all that kind of stuff. Hollywood Reporter, they should have been talking about it, because it's a travesty on how they handled everything. It really is. And I appreciate everything that, you know, that you have been doing to get it out there. And this movement, the Release of Snyder Cut movement, has just grown traction based off of what you've done and what the Culture Nerd has done. Not saying that you guys are the one of the same, but you guys have, you know, in the past month or so, you, in my eyes at least, you've been at the forefront. You and the Culture Nerd have been at the forefront of getting all this information out. And it's really, it's nice to see. And the movement now is getting so much traction, and there's, and we're finally, the, for those of us who are part of the movement, because I think anybody who is trying to shed a light on what actually happened and help, you know, move forward and hopefully get this Snyder Cut at some point, I say is part of this movement. But I feel like we're finally getting somewhere with it. And I don't think that would have happened unless it would have been for, you know, Lightcast and even the Cultured Nerd, you know, coming out and saying, hey, here's an article here. Are you putting a spotlight on that article and talking with Taylor Murphy and diving deeper into all that?
Yeah, man. I think you make very valid points there for sure. And thank you again for the recommendation of the podcast. And it's great, because it gets these kind of conversations going. And if we can keep talking about something, you can't hide it. You know, if you're continuously talking about, and we're still talking about Man of Steel after what, 7 years, and Batman Superman after 4 years, and we're still talking about those two particular films. And that is good filmmaking, when you have a discussion. And film is not to be, film in its essence was always meant to drive conversation. It's not to drive, you know, the back end of it is to drive ticket sales, but at the other, the point of it is to drive conversation and an emotional response. Even if you hate it or you love it, you're supposed to talk about it. You're supposed to talk about why. I mean, one of the worst films I ever saw was Shoot 'Em Up. I mean, but do I sit there and bash on it all day? Maybe. I don't know, but I'm still talking about it. I'm still talking about why it was bad. I'm trying to understand what happened, you know, and I think that some of these bloggers or some of these YouTubers out there that just keep bashing, or they make clickbait article headlines to get you to click. They do it in a sense to drive traffic to their channel. There's a bigger picture there, that the more clicks they get, the more, you know, their analytics go up. And you've really got to choose where you get your information from, if you trust it or not. Like I'm saying, like, if you trust some of the people that you listen to, you keep listening to them. You know, I'm not telling you not to. I'm just telling you to take what they say and take that information and go research, go look for yourself. It's always best to inform yourself. I tell that to my students, that, you know, I might say something that you might disagree with. Okay, now go take what I've said and research that. Go and find not just one source, find five sources that are credible. How do you find a credible source? This is how you find a credible source, da-da-da-da-da-da. And you get into that area where we're getting people to actually go out there and read, because that's one of the biggest things that's lacking in, I think, society right now, is that we're so fixated on watching that we're forgetting to listen and we're forgetting to read. And, You know, it's just how we interpret information is the most essential thing.
Excellent. I mean, yes. Sorry. I kind of want to. We've been a little over an hour here, so I kind of want to step away and you know kind of wrap up everything here. I could sit here. I mean, I could sit here and talk with you for probably another 2 or 3 hours on this because I'm very passionate about what's going on, and it's not just because I want the movie. It's just because, like you said, it was such a terrible thing that was going on within Warner Brothers and Hollywood at that time, and I think it needs to be put out there. And I feel for Snyder and his family. I'm sure you do as well. Everything, and I do hope that he does get to finish it. I know that there's a lot of talk that he's going to have the movie, finished. He'll be able to finish it, whether he has the funding or is working on the funding, or with everything that happened with COVID-19, if they have to re-discuss what they're going to do. The one thing that I do want to talk about real quick is, you know, people who are the naysayers, the ones that are putting out those blogs and everything that you're talking about that, you know, are starting the kind of, it's the negative side of the conversation. I think they need to realize that if this comes out, it doesn't harm anybody, you know, and I just, to me, I don't understand why they feel the need to be so combative when it comes to all of that and everything that it's a movie, you know, and there's passionate fans behind it and they want to see it. That's, you know, one side of it, but then you have the side of fans and the side of it where the fans are passionate because they feel for Zack Snyder. They feel that how he was treated was unjust. I really hope that these people, and you know, I'm not going to get into who they are, but there are some YouTubers and podcasters out there who really, really bash and put a negative light on what the movement is about. I really hope that they lose some traction in their negativity. I really do.
Yeah, I think you have a good point. And I don't think that negativity drives from not liking it. Sometimes it drives from other outside sources, or, you know, it drives from maybe they don't understand it. And one of the biggest examples of that is we tend to fear what we don't understand. And, you know, that's just kind of how we are as a species, like humans as a species. We're very derivative on the idea to be part of a collective or to be part of a group or to be part of the whole mass of everything, that we tend to follow rather than to lead. And sometimes we forget that, you know, if we don't like something, it's okay to share your opinion and your expression, but to constantly bash on other people for enjoying something, I think that is where it starts to get toxic. And I don't agree with that. I don't agree that people should, you know, I don't enjoy Green Lantern with, you know, Ryan Reynolds, but I'm not going after the people that do. You know, and there's a lot of films I don't like. There's a lot of films I do like. There's cars I don't like, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not going after, you know, those people and saying you shouldn't drive that car and da 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 da. I'm not trying to tell people how to live their lives. I just want people to see that there's a bigger picture, that, you know, it's okay to accept what other people are saying and come to a common ground. There's a common neutrality there that, I mean, this negativity is eventually going to have to, it's going to weed itself out. And I think I've said that is, I think people are going to get tired of it because we're already living in a time in a pandemic where we're stuck at home. People are getting irritable. People can't shave. People can't, you know, go out in the community. I mean, people are a little irritated. And if we keep driving more and more of that negativity, just imagine what that does to the, you know, to our mental health. And it kind of pulls us away and we start to act almost in a maladaptive way to where we start to attack back at people.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, I mean, that's pretty much the best way to put it. I mean, that, you know, people need to relax. And I think that it will, like you're saying, it's going to weed itself out. It's going to eventually just come to an end, hopefully soon. Because I think, you know, it's just distracting in a way. And I know that a lot of people in the movement have been trying to push a more positive light on everything that happened. I know that they have some big plans coming up. I think that you're a part of them as well as I am when it comes to what they're planning on doing. So I'm looking forward to that. I really am. And I hope that it goes well. Like I said, I would love to sit here and talk with you a whole bunch more, but you know, we're over an hour now, and maybe get you on again some other time, maybe when it comes out or before it comes out. Once it's announced, maybe we can sit down and have another discussion.
Yeah, that'd be
about
an interesting conversation
to see what's going on. But no, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I really do enjoy your show. Where can everybody find you? Like, where's the best place to find who you are, you and your show?
To find me, it's easy. You can just, you know, type in my name. You can go to Twitter. It's LightCastPod. The show, you can find it anywhere, on your phone, any devices. We're anywhere you get podcasts. You know, that's iTunes, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify. Pretty much you could just type it in LightCast Podcast and you'll find it. It's also over on, we just started doing the YouTube shows. So that's over on Lightcast Pod as well on YouTube. So, I mean, I'm pretty easy to find. Instagram, Twitter is really where I kind of do most of my interactions. I always interact with anybody. So if you come and ask me a question or you send me a message or something, I'm pretty open to have a discussion.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks. I've never been able to stay consistent on Twitter. I'm all about Facebook. So when it comes to me, if people want to reach me, the best place is to find us on Facebook. But I try to be as consistent on Twitter as possible. I'm not a big fan of that social media outlet there. It's just so tough to it's just, I don't know. Okay, but thanks for coming on, man. And like I said, I hope we get to do this again sometime. And I will point everybody into towards your podcast, because it's an excellent show. I do really appreciate everything that you've done for the movement, and I really enjoy your show.
All right, thank you, Robert. I appreciate that.
No problem. You have a good day.
All right, you too.
There you have it, guys. That was my discussion with Matthew from Lightcast Podcast. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show, man. It was a pleasure, and I can't wait to have you on the show again. Or maybe, hey, maybe sometime or somehow I can jump over on your show and talk to you about some things. But with all that said, if you like what Matthew was talking about, if you want to check out Lightcast Podcast, just go to your favorite podcatcher app, type in Lightcast, and you'll find him there. He has a YouTube show, YouTube channel. Go check him out there, as well as Twitter. You can find him on Twitter. And just look up Lightcast. That's where you're going to find him. If you enjoyed Bridging to Geekdoms, if you enjoyed the show, you can find all of our shows, as well as a whole bunch of other podcasts at spoilerverse.com. Over at spoilerverse.com, there are shows like Spoiler Country, where they get interviews and discussion with a lot of the great creators and minds within the comic book, Hollywood, and music world. We have Misery Point Radio, awesome show over there with Mike Peacock, Shooting the Sith, Star Wars podcast, as well as Polygon Warriors, which is a video game podcast. So jump over to spoilerverse.com for all of that and so much more. Or you can just jump over to your favorite podcatcher app. Search Bridging to Geekdoms, hit that little subscribe, follow button, and that'll guarantee that you get every new episode of Bridging to Geekdoms as they come out. So with all that said, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you all next week.